Light is all around us. From the morning's first rays of sun to the waning glow of a crescent moon. From the torches of our ancestors to the glowing screens of our mobile devices, light is our guide, our timekeeper, and our guardian. Light shows us where to go and how to move. It teaches us how the world works and how to react. It helps us comprehend our reality. It lets us see. And there's nowhere where this is more apparent than when you're at a concert, listening to your favorite band, and the lighting designer is firing on all cylinders.
Welcome to episode 5 of The Light Side. I'm your host, Luke Stratton, and today's episode is a very special one. Since middle school, I've been a huge fan of the rock group Phish. I used to follow them around after high school. They're the reason I went to music college. And like many LDs out there, I learned a ton about how to light a rock concert by watching Christopher Kuroda do lights. Well, as fate would have it, last week I got to sit down with Phish's lighting team inside Madison Square Garden during their 13-night Baker's Dozen run. This includes lighting designer and director Christopher Kuroda, associate designer and programmer Andrew Giffen, as well as lighting crew chief Terry Smith. Now, we covered so much ground here that I'm actually going to split this up to our first two-part episode. Chris, Giff, and I got pretty deep into what all went into the new light rig and how all the automation works and what Chris thinks is going to happen in Game of Thrones this season. But next episode, we're going to dig in real deep. Giff kind of walked me through the whole show file. So for all you young LDs or just curious LDs out there who want to know how this file is put together, we got down to the nitty-gritty. And then the second part of that episode is going to have my interview with Terry Smith, where he explains what it takes to engineer a rig like this, what it takes to hang it every day, the truck packs, safety requirements, automation, all that good stuff. So without further ado, I present my two-part episode of The Light Side, featuring the Phish lighting team. Okay, here we are at front of house in Madison Square Garden with lighting designer and director Christopher Kuroda and associate designer and programmer Andrew Giffen. Guys, welcome to the program.
Great. Thanks for having us. It's a lot of fun.
Since everyone's so into the new light rig, I wanted to start there. What's the origin of the new rig? How did it come about? And how's the transition from video been?
Oh, well, the transition's been good. Basically, it took all the previous rigs and it took the video to actually get here now. So over the last few years, the band's played a more pivotal role of being involved in design concepts and ideas. For many years, it was just, you know, I would just design the rig and in the 90s and all that. But they started, just sort of having ideas and wanting to go new places. And that sort of rolled into the concept of the video. Let's try something new.
And have you enjoyed their input?
Yes, I've enjoyed their input.
It's been different, though.
It's been different, you know, and you also have four voices that are, it's very difficult for those voices to become one. There's always two that like this and two that like that, or three that like this and one that doesn't, and that kind of thing. So to come to a place where everybody's happy or willing to take a chance and roll the dice, so to speak, you know, these guys are all about taking risks anyway, musically, so when we got to the video, you know, we just wanted to do something very different. We wanted to try to implement a form of video that didn't look like video per se. We were never going to do any IMAG. We were never going to do any finite images. It was all going to be abstract. And that's sort of the road we went down. The video wall opened up and did things which was different than other people have seen or other acts have done. So,
and that was usually a set break, right?
We would usually open it first song, second set, as sort of a reveal moment, you know, a little theatrical. So anyway, this year, which was amazing, we actually thought for a while we were going to roll with the video rig again this year. And I received a phone call from management in May, and they said, look, we want to do something different. The crux of this entire year is this Baker's Dozen at Madison Square Garden. We want to, you know, evolution has sort of been the mantra word over the years. And they literally said, look, we've been telling you what we want and ideas that we have for the last few years, and we've decided that this year you tell us what you want, and we're just going to roll with it. And I went, well, since Giff and I do all the lighting for the Knicks and Rangers, we have access to the whole house rig. So we knew we were going to light the room 360, and that sort of felt like the video element would be kind of like that Sesame Street, one of these things just doesn't belong with the others, because you have light everywhere, and then there'd be this thing. So I said, well, I really want to get rid of that and just have 360-degree light since we're using the rig. And I wanted to just do a bunch of automation with trusses and move trusses around and make different shapes all night long. And that was sort of the beginning idea, which ended up here. So just to finish, we brought in our usual collaborators. I have a couple of collaborators that Giff and I collaborate with, and had them stick their heads in how to move the trusses and what the shape should be and where the starting place should be. And it sort of evolved into what it is now. And again, the mantra was simple, but that can go places that are not simple. Yes. So this is really just, if you're, I mean, I know people on the radio can't hear it, but it's just five straight sticks of truss broken up. They're just straight. And then we can break them up and do all the things that we do with them. So.
It's amazing just how minimalist it looks when you are looking at the plot. Because like he's saying, it really is five straight sticks of truss. They're just not bolted together. In fact, there's nothing up there other than the mother grid that actually is. So every single one of them, there's 5-footers, 8-footers, and 10-footers, have two independent points that can move, and they can all move independently of each other.
Yeah, right now as the rig sits, it's just totally flat. You almost wouldn't know it's a special rig. But, you know.
Yeah, this is actually not the flat.
Yeah,
you're looking at a staggered.
It's raked a bit, if you will.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah. So how many different, we're going to dig into this a bunch later, but how many different shapes can we do here? Like, do you have ready at the moment?
We have a total of 31 built. Currently, we're using 22 of them, something like that.
So for listeners who may not know, this rig, normally the rig is static and the lights move, but this rig, the whole shape of the rig can move in addition to the lights moving.
Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The sort of obstacle we ran into is, of course, we'd want to have all 32 shapes that we've built, plus 50 more. The programming time involved on the navigator end, which is the system that actually, in a very computerized way, moves the trusses, the amount of time it takes to program stuff is astronomical.
Sure.
So
I take there's a bunch of safety standards in there, in that software.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the other thing was, in typical Fish way, we wanted to do a couple of unique things with this that other acts who move trusses around haven't done. So we go vertical.
I noticed that last night, actually. Yeah.
Which took a lot of special hanging hardware to be able to do that, safety issues, again, more programming. And then the other thing that we did was we wanted people to be able to see that the trusses are moving, because in the dark room, so the first idea was truss toners. That's what everybody does. We went, no, everybody does that. So we have these little itty-bitty LED fixtures. They're called atoms.
Yep, they're GLP X4 atoms.
Right, and we have...
It's like one pixel, right?
Yep. Two inside each truss, one on either end. So when the trusses move, you see the atoms move. Mm-hmm. And it's just a different way to show movement than your typical standard truss toner. Light the truss up and go, oh, look, it's moving. No, this is a little more sort of ethereal and organic looking, so...
Speaking of moving, in addition to those 30-some static looks, there are also, I had to look at the cheat sheet over here, we've got 9 currently cues that are dynamic and can continuously move.
So this is like the rig is moving like a wave or something
like
that.
Yes, we've got quite a few of those. Also, astronomical programming time, safety involved. You write it for hours and days, you finally get to look at it, and you go, whoa, that's not safe. All right, it needs to be slower. Yeah. This piece can't tip that much, and those kind of things. And we have some very linear ones like waves, like you said, and then we have some other just sort of chaotic, all-over-the-place ones that we call floaty, or I forget some of the names currently, but...
Chandelier, butterfly, shuttle, snow globe. I love it.
Yes.
I'm also intrigued to see like how many asymmetrical looks there are, because I feel like that's not typically something you see in a fish rig.
Right.
And how's that been?
That's been great.
It's just so different. Like, you wouldn't build a rig that way. But
it's gotten the most reaction.
The sideways one where the whole rig is tilted,
yes,
people freak out.
That's the one. Yeah, yeah. We love that, too.
Yeah, yeah.
As a matter of fact, GIF's been giving me a lot of kind of crap because I always go there first. The show starts, I'm like, go to the slant right away. You know, he's like, again? Like, can't we save that for later?
Yeah.
No. You know, so.
Yeah, I think I was watching the stream last week, I think, and I knew the rig moved, and I've seen that before, and I was like, oh, this is going to be great, and I like walked away, I was doing something, I looked back, and the rig was sideways, and I lost it.
That you know what, it's funny you should mention that, because that was sort of the idea. We know our fans well enough that their eyes aren't open, they're not staring at the stage the entire time, so we wanted to hopefully create an environment where you look up, you look at the band, you see the lighting rig, it's straight, mm-hmm. you close your eyes, you dance, you open them again, and it's sideways, and you go, wait a minute, what did, you know? So seeing it move is one thing, but there are people out there who, like, you know, close their eyes and get into their own world and mm-hmm. open them again and see something completely
The lighting
different.
Rig. It's really interesting, the different looks you can get out of the transitions between the static shapes, right? So Chris was just talking about how his default first cue go-to is one of the slanted ones, right? And then we'll go back the other way and you see it slanted towards the other end of the stage. We do that in a cue that, again, we have to call to the navigator operator backstage, and we ask him to time align it so that all the motors start moving and stop moving at the same time. That mm-hmm. means some of them have to move faster than others to get there. And the effect is literally like a seesaw where you see the whole rig going back and forth. But then later on, like, let's say if Chris wants to use those same shapes in the second set, maybe I'll ask the navigator operator to do it with all the motors running at the same speed instead of taking the same amount of time. So the trusses that have a shorter distance to travel actually get there faster than the other ones, right? And what you end up with is something that looks like a sine wave snake getting mm-hmm. between those same two exact static positions, but the transition of getting between them is different, and it's a different look.
I think it's like Tetris pieces almost, like they're falling into the right place.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. The other cool thing that we do, that we've been doing lately, is they'll be playing and we'll be doing one of our dynamic moves where it's constantly moving, and the song will stop. And it takes a while to get back to its original shape that it began in mm-hmm. before doing the dynamic move. But because the music has stopped, GIF will just have them pause it wherever it is. Mm. So it's just this, it's not any conceived shape, it's like in between three different shapes.
Wait, so when you say pause it, like them, there's a team back there?
There's an operator on the navigator.
And so
system.
It's not controlled by the console?
No. Interestingly enough, we conceived a lot of the shapes using the lighting console, using MA3D, and we built them in there.
Mm-hmm.
Took screenshots of them and exported some data about how they were constructed and gave that to the navigator programmers who then entered it in their system.
So every time you want to call a cue, you're on the radio like, hey, we're going to 45. Or do you say Snowflake?
On a headset. Yeah. And they all have names.
They all have, exactly. And because I don't wear a headset, I can't, because I have to hear all the nuances. GIF and I sort of have a sign language for, you know, this shape will be next, stand by. He'll let me know when it's ready with mm-hmm. some other sign language. I'll give him the go, tell him when to stop, tell him where to go next, that kind of thing. And
very cool.
It's working out really, really well.
The other thing I was thinking about is how, especially with the sideways, it gives you another level of tension. So if they're in the middle of a big jam or something, you can tilt it. And then when you level it out, it's almost like home.
It's like relief.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, I love it. Yeah. Well, I guess with that in mind, can we maybe take a dive back to the older days? You know, I think most of our listeners will know the Mockingbird story from Nectars. But what happened after that? What light rigs, especially, did you have in the early 90s before the band got to arena level? What consoles were you using, that kind of thing?
I was using your basic conventional, I think I had an NSI conventional board, park hands.
Yeah.
That's, you know.
Is that like a big board or?
It was big.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, too big. You know, back then they used to just make them huge, mm-hmm. full of buttons.
Yeah.
I needed full of buttons because even though I only had, let's say, 200 park hands, I still had 50 different scenes, looks, mm-hmm. whatever. And I'm not much of a page changer. So I needed it all in front of me. What wound up happening for me, interestingly enough, is when we started getting into the automated lighting world, we used a light that hardly anybody used called the AltStar. It was Altman Stage Lighting's version of a moving light. And again, in typical Fish way, they wanted to work with somebody on a more boutique level than the big giant moving light players like Varilite and those guys at the time. So we found Altman, who they didn't want a large clientele. They just wanted a couple of small bands to sort of guinea pig their light and deal with the problems that it came with, because it was still sort of in its infancy back then. And us and Blues Traveler were the two acts that
What year is this roughly?
91.
Okay,
maybe something like that.
So, like before the arena level, then.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then from there, once that light started not really fulfilling the needs that we had, then we started moving to the bigger players like Altman. I mean, like Varilite. And it was Varilite. Artisan was the console.
So you were controlling the Altmans on your big...
No, it had its own proprietary console.
And you were running both, or you had another guy calling
another
cues?
Another guy. I was calling cues over a headset. It was the only way to do it.
Yeah. But, so when did that end? Is that when the MA showed up?
When the MA showed up.
And what year was that?
MA-1 I started using in, I want to say, 98, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Just guessing. Yeah, and then all, and yeah, I still had two MA-1s, and I still had another guy running some cues as well, but for the most part, I was running the show solidly by myself because the technology finally existed that I could. So
was there a point in there in the 90s when a certain fixture or console showed up before the MA, let's say, that really kind of took your show and your ability to run the show to the next level?
I would say no. I mean, we used Hogs for a while. We used this proprietary Altman board. No, the MA would be that console.
Got it.
The MA is the one that allowed us to take things to the next level.
Got it. So in these early days, how did you get better? Like what was your, if you had a practice method, or who did you pay attention to? What was your study method, if you will, to improve your skills?
You know, I didn't really necessarily have a study method. You know, I think it's pretty obvious that my number one core sort of go-to designer that I tried to emulate was Candace Brightman, with all the slow sweeping moves. And that's just sort of where I came from. Mm-hmm. And this band was, you know, similar in those ways. Their music was similar in those ways that you could just sort of do that. But what wound up happening was way back in the day, there was sort of a core group of four of us that were the crew. I was the lighting designer. There was a front of house audio engineer. There was a monitor guy. There was a tour manager. A couple other guys. And what wound up happening is we started getting bigger, and these guys, old friends of mine, just couldn't keep up with the technology that was now necessary to do our shows, and one by one they were getting replaced by more competent, you know, more seasoned professionals.
Sure.
You know, back in the club buddy days when you're all college friends, that's one thing. So I saw this happening around me and said, you know, bye-bye monitor guy, old friend. Now there's a new monitor guy. Bye-bye front of house guy. Bye-bye this guy. But tour manager couldn't keep up with the numbers and the accounting and stuff. And I said to myself, I can see where this is going. So I went and enrolled in Varilite School in Dallas, Texas, and went and learned how to program artisans, how to fix lights, how to repair them, everything there was to do. And it was a true course where you literally had to take a final exam at the end of the course. I had to take a programming the artisan final exam where they said, pick a song in our studio, here are our lights, here's some like figures to be your band, pick a song, write the lighting for the song, and then we're going to grade you on it.
Oh wow.
So I chose Emotional Rescue from the Rolling Stones, programmed the song, and then it was time for my final exam, and the room literally fills up with 30 guys in business suits, like the top executives from Verilite, and they're all standing there, and I'm like, what is going on here? And these are the guys that are going to critique my final exam.
Yeah. How'd you do?
When it was over, they all turned to me and looked at me and went, that's the best final exam we have ever seen in our entire time teaching this class.
Yep.
And I went, oh, great. Okay, cool.
Cool, so, man. Yeah.
So I did well. And then came back out on the road, brought artisans, brought Verilites, and had the skills to continue to keep up with what was going on. So basically, I just took it upon myself, seeing the pattern that was happening around me, and went, I'm not going to let that happen to me. So
yeah. So then, how did you two meet? What's the origin of that story?
Oh, that's a whole nother story.
I feel like you guys are like Batman and Robin now, or something. There's maybe a better analogy than that, but, you know.
I'll tell that story, too, if you don't mind.
Have at it.
Okay, so when we came back in 2009, after a five-year hiatus,
yeah,
I had a programmer. His name's Dirk Sanders. Fantastic guy, fantastic programmer, and he helped me write that first tour back. And right in the midst of it, right when we were getting ready to start, we played three nights at Hampton, and then we had a summer planned. Dirk got offered the video director position with Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
So he took it. Bye-bye, Dirk.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, I supported him all the way.
Sure.
And he got replaced with another programmer by the vendor that we were using, Upstaging. That programmer didn't work out. We had to let him go. We got provided with another programmer. That programmer sold himself as a programmer, but didn't know how to program anything. He just needed a job.
Yeah.
So he would sit back there and do crossword puzzles while I tried to program the show.
This is MA2.
MA1. Still MA1.
Oh, okay.
Then a third, we got rid of him, and a third programmer came in, did one leg of a two-leg tour, and just didn't come back for the second leg.
Like no call, no show?
Well, like the day before the tour, called them, and I'm not coming. I just don't feel like it.
Wow.
Don't. So now, in this one year, I'd gone through four programmers.
Yeah.
So in a very frustrated state, I called Upstaging and said, I'm sick and tired of this. I can't roll like this. Because previous programmers in the 90s were with me for years and years
of course,
years.
Yeah.
You know, there was a sort of a bond and a commitment to Fish from these other guys. So,
and most of your listeners probably realize this, but Fish is unique in that we have a programmer out here on the road,
yeah,
right? That's not a typical situation. Most shows, you program it, maybe you're around for the first week or so, and you've sent it on its merry way.
But yeah,
we're constantly adding to the show.
Often so, with an operator instead of the designer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
you got some big wigs now, for lack of a better word, on this tour. You guys are like running the show off the road and on the road. Yeah,
very much so. So at this point, I called Upstaging, called my rep there, and went, this is ridiculous. I need one name.
Yeah.
And here's the criteria. Commitment, long-term, has to be a cool person.
Wizard.
Someone good to work with, a top-notch programmer, but someone who's not going to bail on me and someone who's going to commit to this because this unique situation that is Fish requires that kind of person. And I know they're out there because we've had them in the past, you know, but this year we just couldn't. So I said, one name. I want one name. A couple days go by, get a phone call. Here's your one name, Andrew Giffen.
Yep.
Here's his phone number. I was out with Black Crowes at the time. It was the middle of the afternoon, left the venue, went to the bus where it was quiet, called Giff on the phone and went, hi, I'm Chris. I've been given your number. Here's the deal. Here's the band. He didn't know anything about Fish, but he was in. And, you know, I wanted to feel him out as a person. I knew he had the skill set. If Upstaging said he had the skill set, felt him out as a person. It all went really, really well. We had a great conversation. And he came. His first endeavor with us was Festival 8.
Ah, okay.
We sat out in the middle of the field in Indio, you know, the Coachella site, right? Mm-hmm. And programmed the palm trees, which of course now is at every Coachella and every other festival they
of
do
course.
There. But I think our festival, Festival 8 with Fish, was the first time anybody had ever lit them.
Yes.
So,
okay,
that was our first experience together, though, was sitting out in the middle of the field, freezing our butts off in the middle of the night out there, yeah, and integrating all those trees into the Fish show.
So what was that like for you? I mean, were you on other tours before that? What kind of work were you doing?
I'm not
before?
Much of a touring guy at all.
Okay.
I was living in Los Angeles doing a lot of TV, some film work, a lot of corporates, that sort of thing. Programming tours, but not going out on them. So this was a new endeavor that I didn't know how I felt about at first, but it turns out it's great. And it's not like these guys are on the road such a long time every year that it would preclude me from doing other things. So it works out very well.
He also had his hesitations because...
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say this.
I sent him the show file.
Yeah. I wanted to check it out. I said, hey, send me what you got.
You can answer this. So I sent him the show file and...
And there was a moment where I honestly thought about not taking the gig because I thought the show file was all disorganized and it didn't make any sense.
Like too
and
messy?
I was like, "How is this guy a joke, really? Like, can you actually run a show with this thing?
Five programmers in one... Well,
it was also the way I execute timing that he couldn't figure out.
There's no speed faders. There's none of that going on. I'm like, how is he running this show live?
Yeah.
And there was a little five programmeritis going on as well.
Yeah.
So,
Is the mix of programmers mixed with your unique operating style?
Yeah, he like looked at it and went, I know I've heard this guy's name, but this show file makes no sense at all to what he was used to. So while he while we were getting ready for Festival 8, he told me this story. He's like, look, I got to tell you, I almost didn't come because I looked at your show file and it makes no sense and I still don't understand it. And I just looked at him, and not to float my own boat, I looked him in the eye and I went, I will blow you away.
And I remember, and I've never seen a fish show, right? Sure. So I just looked at him and went, okay.
Yeah. He was like, whatever, right?
Yeah, sure, dude.
And so, go ahead.
And so night one, you know, we're two songs in or something. And true story, blew me away.
Nice.
Awesome.
Nice.
There's a certain style to the way he executes the show that I've just never seen before. And then all of a sudden it made sense why the show file is structured the way that it was.
And you've probably never seen a file that punt heavy, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But not in that style at all.
Are you saying you had seen a file, but not the
course.
Way it is?
I've programmed a lot of nightclubs in Las Vegas, for example, and those turn into giant punts, right?
But the cool thing was, after that night one, when he finally saw it, and you know, that show ended, he came to me and was like, I get it, and now that I get it, I have 50 ideas for you to add to see what you think, and then the relationship was off.
So are there any, what were the first couple big breakthroughs that you guys had a team as far as, like, what if we do it this way? Do you guys remember?
I think it was the trees that I was just talking about, right? Because Chris wanted them to be part of the show, not just a separate element that was changing colors and whatever, but he really wanted it integrated with the fish show as he was punting it. And we had to sit down and conceive how that was going to work, right? Well, turns out the backbone of the show is a stack of looks, right?
Yep.
I think there were probably 100 at that point. And what we decided to do was to add the trees into all the looks in a solid color.
Yep.
But then in the 5 seconds that it usually takes to go from one look to another, which Chris runs in any order throughout the night, we added custom timing to the trees. So on all the cue numbers that ended with one, they wiped from house left to house right. All the cue numbers that ended with two, they wiped from the center out in 5 seconds. All the cue numbers that ended with three, they just did a simple 5 second crossfade, whatever. But that little breakthrough was what made all those trees able to integrate into the show and be animated with everything else. I think that was probably the first thing like that that we've done together.
And that's a perfect example of collaborating, where I just wanted the trees to change in the 5 seconds that the cue changes. In my head, a crossfade was it.
Yeah.
He's the one who went, great, but what if they sometimes wipe this way and sometimes wipe that way,
or
and sometimes center
in,
out, or sometimes they sprinkle, or something, you know? And of course I went, yes, you can do that. I could program that, no problem, you know? That was like one of the first, like, all right, we understand each other.
It,
you know,
it might have
been
the origin of our favorite word. Chris and I love the word "and," right? So the trees are going to change color in every look. They can do it this way. And then a lot of times there's another step when he comes back and goes, and it can do this. And then 4 or 5 ands later, and several years later, we're still down that same process. And then you have a cue that neither one of us would have come up with on our own.
So, well, my other favorite word is both. So Giff will go, all right, so you want me to write this for you? Do you want me to, so that it does it this way or so that it does it that way? And I'll look at him and go, both.
Yeah.
And he'll go, I knew you were going to say that. You know,
sometimes, like,
that.
It's not even worth asking. Both.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about this look stack, which is basically a cue stack or sequence, if you will, of a bunch of different looks for the full rig. What's the origin of this tool that you guys use, and maybe can you explain the concept to some of our layman listeners?
Well, it's really the backbone of the entire show. Every effect, everything plays on top of the look stack for the most part.
So it's basically a sequence with a bunch of different looks in it.
It is about, there's probably more now, but let's say there's 100 looks. And the origin was, in the midst of a fish jam, I knew in my head where I needed to go at any given moment. So it's broken up in tens. So, for example, looks 1 through 10 are all in the cool color range, with no light on the band, all just aerial, the entire thing aerial. 11 through 20 is the same thing, warm.
Mm-hmm.
21 through 30 is cool with front wash on the band, but other things in a graphic. 31 through 40 is warm like that. 41 through 50 is sort of a miscellaneous, like not cool, not warm, combinations of colors that sort of not necessarily working together but look good.
So if I said 55, you know that look?
50, I know exactly that.
Okay, 55, and you know the whole stack.
55 is every light in 55 on the band, nothing in the air.
Got
51
it.
In a cool color combination,
sure,
61
sure.
through 70 yeah. in a warm. So that in the midst of a jam, when I needed something like that, all 10 of that framework would work in that moment. So if I could use 1, 6, 8, 4, 9, any of them would be the right look for the moment
yeah.
coming up.
So rather than like a two-digit number, it's just two numbers next to each other. You've got warm or cool and where the lights are pointed, and then 1 through 9.
You know what? I never thought of it that way, but yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And yes, he really does have them all memorized.
Yeah.
And
all
they,
of them.
They
well,
change
okay, so
from year to year, and that was one of the things that impressed me at that first show in mm-hmm. Festival 8. Was I assumed he was just sort of randomly punting his way through
sure.
that thing until I realized, no, he knows exactly that he needs to go to 37 right now.
Yeah.
And the other really fascinating thing is there's time on all of those cues. Usually it's 5 seconds. We can modify that, but mm-hmm. usually it's 5 seconds. And the way Chris operates the show is he tries to land the cue on the downbeat rather than start it on the downbeat.
Yeah.
So at that first show, I'm going, I'd look over and see him hit the go button at no particular moment
yeah.
and sort of curious why he had done that. And every single time, of course,
downbeat.
It lands. You watch the 5 seconds tick down on the console and boom, it hits right
yeah.
on the downbeat.
Yeah.
I have never met somebody else who runs a show quite like that.
Yeah. So can you finish the numbering system for our curious listeners? Like what's the use of the 60s is what?
Warm, all on band, doesn't matter what fixture type.
Sure.
And so on. It's changed. So now, this year, believe it or not, 70s, 80s, and 90s are, they used to have other meanings. Now they're looks that work with trusses vertical.
Oh, okay.
Got as it. Opposed to horizontal.
So, I mean, have you ever considered, I think I know the answer to this, but why not just build a page of macros that go to the different...
Both.
Yeah. Okay, so you have that somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Both.
Or maybe
exactly.
a MIDI controller.
So if I'm vertical and I'm in a 40-something, which is not built for vertical, I can go to the vertical pan and tilt and keep the
oh,
look.
Oh, but I think what Luke was asking about is all the looks, right? To have those all on their own buttons rather than typing
yeah, like
them
why
in,
not
right?
have a page of 100... You know, row 1, row 2, row 3.
That would work just fine.
But
it would take up
style.
A lot of real estate.
Sure.
But it's just not my style.
Sure. And you're actually saying go to cue.
Go to 37, please.
And so the look stack is always selected.
Correct.
The look stack
in
is
MA.
Always selected.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And a thousand times a night, he's typing go to a number
yeah.
of please to the point where he had worn the coating off of the keycap on the go to button.
It's funny, you know, because I teach a lot of MA and I always show people this, but it's never a way I would do it. And I always say to them, you know, look, like when I was a young programmer, I mean, I'm still young, but you know, I was like, if I could just know how Chris lays his file out, you know, but then I found my own way and I would never do it that way. And I think that's the best part about MA, you know, everybody gets to do it their own way
that's,
and they all work.
I was just going to say, that's yeah. what makes MA MA. You can lay it out however works for you.
Yeah.
And I know the way I do it is highly unorthodox, and nobody else would do it that way.
Yeah.
That's just how I do it.
Yeah.
And it's not for lack of anything except back in the first MA1 days, that's just how I started doing it. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, sure, there's easier ways now, but just my head doesn't work that way.
So you would never consider doing like 2 measures of fade instead of 5 seconds?
No.
That would be like, get out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's back to what I was talking about with landing the cues on downbeats and that sort of thing is Chris has certain timings just ingrained in his head, right? Like all the one shots in the show are exactly 1.2 seconds, right?
Yeah.
He knows 1.2 seconds extremely well. Yeah. So he knows when to hit the button so that the one shot across the stage will end right at a musical moment, right? And there's a handful of other times like that I assume you've used for years and years and years and years that are just ingrained and they work.
And there's a million things, whether it's a color wipe, a one shot, and a variety of other cues that are not 5 seconds. The looks are 5 seconds developing from one to the next. But if I need quicker things to happen, I have all that in effect world, so I can still do something that takes 1 second with an effect as opposed to changing the look.
Okay, so expanding on that, let's say we've got the looks sequence or cue stack as the backbone of your show, but you're laying your file out so that everything is punt, all laid out. What else is in there that's really important? We don't have to go through step by step. Maybe Giff and I will do that later. But what else is like the bread and butter of the Kuroda show besides the look stack?
The color wipes, the one shots,
dimmer effects.
What we refer to as rises and falls, which are slow sweeps.
Like pan tilt sweeps?
Pan tilt sweeps. You know, big chorus sweep out in the crowd. But again, everything, one of our mantra words is elegant. So I don't have any sweeps out into the house that are 5 seconds.
Sure.
We call them rise and slow rise, or fall and slow fall. And the timings on those are 35 seconds or 70 seconds.
And those are just position cues?
They're just position cues. There's a position, which again goes back 30 years in my head, that we call 201, which is really just out. Right? 202 is a cross once out, 203 is an uncross.
And they're numbers to you, not names.
They're names, but they're number. The number is the name.
Yeah,
right?
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah.
So 201 is a built position. So wherever the fixtures are, if I hit rise one in this case to go to 201, what we refer to as 201, that'll take 35 seconds from wherever the light is to get there. Now again, I'm sure a lot of lighting designers do this or directors. I don't usually let it get all the way there and stop. Like when it's close, I'm off to the next thing.
Got it. Yeah.
Just like I used to write these sort of conceived, organized ballyhoo cues where there'd be three positions. One of them would be out, one of them would be the stage, one of them would be out in a different way, and three groups of lights. And they would sort of do this three-step thing, each group going to a different place.
Kind of like a conductor.
Right. And that's still in the show.
It's still in the show, but way back in the day before I ever had a programmer, it would be 5 seconds to here, 5 seconds to there, 5 seconds to here, and so on and so forth. But it would stop. It would get there, stop for a millisecond, and then go to the next place.
Yeah.
So you have to get clever and say, take 5 seconds to get here, but start going to the next place in 4.8.
Yeah, gotcha.
And things like that, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. In fact, that is the only movement that you see in the show. There's actually nothing that does a ballyhoo with any effects engine logic.
Oh, wow.
It's built out of presets that get cleaned up, and then the like Chris was describing, you know, maybe three different groups of lights are with offset timing moving between those three positions, and I think it's a lot cleaner, and you can make something really unique that you wouldn't get just by putting a sine wave on the fan.
Which is another one of our mantra words, clean. I'll say to GIF all the time, and I'm sure the listeners will agree or disagree, but I've said to GIF many times that lighting, in my opinion, lighting is all about pan and tilts. Clean, clean, clean pan and tilts. To me, that's the core of lighting, at least the way I see it. You know what I mean?
Have you ever messed around with a different path for the pan tilt, rather than it being like linear where it starts and stops at the same you know, where it kind of like
that
ramps up or slows
down? That movement that we were just describing that looks like a ballyhoo but it's not, uses ramp up and ramp down to keep it smooth.
But you like it on like the look stack for it to be like moving pop. Like you don't want it to fall in on the look stack. Like where it slowly gets there at the end, you know?
No, I don't like that at all.
Okay.
Yeah. There are certain fixtures that have those features built in, and that's why I won't use them.
Okay.
Like some Varilites today actually have a ramp in and slow down before you get there feature that you can't get rid of, and it drives you bananas.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it starts, then it gets fast, and then it gets slow, and no.
This
has got to be fluid. Fish is very organic and fluid. Everything's got to be fluid, so.
And like we were talking about how the cues, for the most part, land on a downbeat rather than starting there. We also have all the attributes of the lights that can't crossfade, like if there's a color wheel or a gobo going in and out, that sort of thing. They all happen at 4.9 seconds in the queue.
So
seeing the lights stop moving at the same instant that all of that, the snap changes happen, is a really clean sort of punctuated end to the queue.
Luckily, with our best boys, we finally found a light that you don't have to do that with the gobo wheel.
Let's talk about the fixtures that are being used in this year's rig, specifically the PRG Best Boy. Now, did that fixture make it in mostly because of the gobo fade feature that you were talking about a second ago?
Yeah, I had actually specced BMFLs.
Yeah.
We had just switched vendors to PRG. We were in PRG working on the video last year, and they literally walked in and said, look, we'll get you the BMFLs. We're about to order them. We have to subrent them from someone else. But we have this light, the Best Boy. Come check it out. And I was like, no, I want BMFLs there because they're beautiful lights.
Yeah. And you were using those on Ariana Grande, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, they're awesome. I love them. But the Best Boy cross, you can put cue timing onto the gobo wheel and crossfade it without having to trigger some weird speed channel. I'm sure you know all about that speed channel. Doesn't work for us. And there hasn't been a fixture that's done that at the 1500 watt lamp level in like 20 years.
Yeah.
The Altstars, which we were talking about before, used to do that.
Yeah, that's like part of your DNA.
Used to it then and then couldn't do it anymore. And there were some Martin fixtures like way back when that had something called vector mode.
Yeah.
And you could put it in vector mode and it would do the gobo thing.
Yeah.
But all the manufacturers stopped doing that because of heat issues and they're afraid that careless people are going to leave the gobo wheel in between two holes and fry the whole
system. Should just make like a, you know, Chris Kuroda firmware. You know?
We've had that before also.
Yeah.
Martin made a Chris Kuroda firmware for the Mac 2Ks back when that was the hot light of the time to do that trick.
So we got the Best Boys. What's the beam fixture in the rig?
PRG Icon Edges.
Is that new
brand
fixture?
New. Yeah, I believe we're the first tour in North America using
We are. And that was, again, another PRG. I spec'd Axioms.
Mm.
And PRG said, we'll get you the Axioms, but this is our brand new hybrid light.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Oh, they just wanted me to spec it.
Oh, okay.
And I went, I'm not specing anything until I see one. Well, they're in the UK. I don't think we can get you one. I went, if I can't see the light, I'm not specing it on the tour. So they jumped through hoops and FedExed one from Europe to Florida, where I live. And Giff and I ran it through its paces and went, this thing is awesome.
Does it have color mixing?
It does.
It does.
And all the functions of the light work throughout the whole zoom range, right?
Perfect.
Where a lot of other
Axiom,
beam fixtures, once you get it down in the beam mode, certain things don't work. So we were definitely impressed by that.
But it's
also
bright.
Just bright as heck.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And, you know, in my opinion, we were using Mythos last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a Sharpie.
Yeah.
And it's a hybrid. As soon as you take it out of beam mode, it's useless. So we thought we'd have a better shot with the other side of the hybrid light, the gobo side, with the Axiom, because they're brighter.
Sure.
Maybe we'll see the gobos and actually it works as a hybrid light. And then we saw the Edge, and it's so freaking bright. I mean, it's like painfully bright, mm-hmm. that we knew it would work really well as a hybrid and a beam light. And it has some really nice features. It's got some nice half color in the wheel stuff that you can do. It, the way that it's got a linear prism, which we're big on.
Yeah. Are you building that into the pan tilts?
Yes. It's the all attributes are built into the look that it belongs in. So,
yeah.
Whether it's...
Including dimmer, right?
Everything.
Yeah, wow. So you go to a look and it's everything that light's doing. You don't have any... Well, you probably have sprinkles you can add on top, but...
There's tons to add on top of the core, you know. So we had a lot of look. As I was building them in previs, you know, we previs for about a month before we do these tours. As I was building them, you know, he would be taking notes and I'd go, look, 31 is a indexer and it's the linear prism. So we got to reality, we'd know that you got it. We have to index that one. Or look, 73 is an indexer with this gobo in this fixture type. Okay, got the note. Then when we got to rehearsals, we went through all the indexers and indexed them properly.
Okay, got it.
Right?
Yeah. So are you reusing pan tilts for each different, for different looks, or are they all their own pan, like, positions?
Oh, no. Reusing.
Okay.
But that's the beauty of it. I'll build, let's say, there are probably about 18 to 20 pan and tilts. But I don't just say, all lights in this pan and tilt.
Mix
it's
it
like
up, yeah.
U6 in this one, but U6 in that pan and tilt. The pan and tilts are all presets. So you clean up the presets, and then everything's going to be clean.
Sure.
So there definitely are looks where every light is in this one pan and tilt, but there are lots of looks where there are four different pan and tilts creating that look.
And then you guys are still rocking the Claypacky BIs in the rig?
Yes.
Love them still, or?
They're great. They're yeah, we love them, but we're also... ready to move on.
You've had them for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And they're starting to show their age a little bit, just as far as reliability goes. Great product, but, you know, it's again, like I said before, one of our mantra words is evolution.
Sure.
It's time to evolve past the BI for us.
And, you know, since you guys first brought them out, they've been in a lot of other shows, so you kind of see them a lot.
Yeah. I still think we use them differently than they do in a lot of other shows. In fact, when we're writing effects for them, we try not to think about them as individual fixtures. You'll never see, like, the propeller blade or the bar going around an individual light. We try to write things that play across the rig as a whole. So maybe it's a figure eight that's looping between adjacent lights, right? Or a line that goes from one side of the stage to the other that gets passed off from fixture to fixture to fixture. So we've enjoyed playing with them doing that kind of stuff, but like you said, that they're a few years now in the rig, and it's probably time to move on to something else.
Sure. We also would never even have thought of using them in any other way but 169 channel mode.
Of course, yeah. Why not? Yeah. So, and then you also have the GLP. What was the name of the fixture again? The Pixel
Atom.
And that's kind of like a almost like a truss toner, but not pointed at the truss.
It's in the truss. It almost looks like two eyeballs.
Sure,
you know, two in each truss. And that helps us. That was our clever way to show that the trusses are moving.
And am I correct in assuming they're always zoomed all the way out?
They're always zoomed all the way out.
So, you know, because you can kind of, from the audience, you can just see the light everywhere, but you don't ever see a beam.
They're actually in three-quarter.
Yeah.
But it's wide enough.
Wide enough.
The tough thing is, because it's not a pan and tilt fixture, to physically line them up perfectly, because when you zoom them down, they make a nice beam. But to go through and, you know, it's sort of chaos.
Yeah.
So the sort of, again, the organic way to present them has been 3/4 to wide somewhere in there.
Sure. And then what about the 360 fixture you've got going?
The SphereScan.
SphereScan, yeah. That's kind of like a throwback for you, right?
It's a throw because the Altstar used to do that.
Yeah, everyone, you know, before the tour started, all the lighting groups were talking about, oh, Chris is bringing back a 360 thing, and it reminds me of some of that 98 stuff, I guess.
That was the idea.
Yeah.
I got sort of given, the one directive I got given by management and band and stuff was, if we're getting rid of the video, find a unique fixture to replace it with. Something unique.
Mm-hmm.
And Giff and I were going to use them on Justin Bieber. It never wound up happening, but we went, that's the unique fixture.
Yeah. It kind of is like a helicopter-y freak out.
And thing. It's, you know, the trick is to just use it sparingly. Don't blow wide.
Well,
right
they're
off the
bat. They're bright too, so.
They're bright. Yep. And this might be a one-year-only thing for them, but...
Sure.
You know, again, some sort of special presentation for mm-hmm. the Baker's Dozen, which is what our whole year is about.
I mean, I guess if you want to dig into it, they spin 360 kind of like a donut, you know?
Oh, there you go.
So.
I was just going to say that it works really well with the 360 cell here at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
Because it's not like there's the back wall of a shed or something that it's going to hit when it rotates around. It lights up the people back there.
Yeah. And he just hit the nail on the head why we might not see them next year.
Because
assuming we're going to be in a lot of sheds, it just now you can't really use it. You can use it. It just doesn't look good when it spins on the back wall.
Yeah.
You go, I don't want that. You know,
yeah. So. What are you using for your main downstage wash, or is that just a Best Boy flipped around?
There's Best Boys are one form of downstage wash. BIs are another form of downstage wash. And then what we refer to as our specials, or believe it or not, I'm still living in the analog world and call them Lecos.
Sure, even though they're moving.
They're more Best Boys.
Oh, okay, so, great. Yeah. But you treat those in the file as a separate
they're
set?
They're dedicated to specials. Always,
they have one position, one color, one beam size.
Great. Yeah.
They literally used to be Lecos.
Yeah. What about the house rig? Giff and I talked about this a little bit, but the fact that you guys... Well, let's talk about the Knicks Rangers thing. And what's that been like for you guys? What kind of creative challenges it's been? And then how that's worked with Baker's Dozen bringing in the house rig?
It's been amazing. You know, ironically, anyone who plays here actually is allowed to have access to it. Nobody takes advantage of that. So having... This will be my third season coming up with Knicks Rangers. Having had the opportunity, and we know the system so well, we made the 3D model for the room for Knicks Rangers. So when we were putting this show together, Giff literally overlaid both 3D models. So we had the fish and the room and the whole thing. And
perfect.
We're able to go to town that way.
Yeah.
It was interesting the way we got the job. I got a call from a guy named Sean Bennett, who's in charge of Knicks Entertainment, in-game entertainment. And he's a fish fan. And he brought me in and had me rewrite some Knicks stuff. And then the Rangers guy was around and went, oh, I really like what you're doing, rewriting the Knicks stuff. Rewrite some Rangers stuff for me. Sure. So now I'm sort of embedding myself and working my way into getting this. And I hear a conversation. The console was an EOS, which, you know, I don't know how to program an EOS. And so we're working on stuff. I'm working with the EOS programmer. And... I hear this conversation, the executives are standing behind us, and I hear this conversation going, yeah, we really wanted an MA2 in here to run the entire building, but ETC and EOS told us that we couldn't do it, that it wouldn't work, that it's just not compatible, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sort of listening, and I stop programming whatever I was programming, and I turn around and I go, I don't believe that that's true, and I'll bet I can prove it.
Nice.
And they went, oh, yeah, how? I went, I know a guy. Yeah. I know a guy who knows MA really, really well. He's my partner. And I bet you at least let's prove that it can't really work. And they go, can you get him here? And I went, well, when do you want him here? Can he get on a plane in an hour?
Well, it was a dark day at the Garden, which is very rare, right?
Yeah,
so it's like, well, we have the time right now. And
yeah.
I got a
phone
call.
So I called Giff and went, Get over here right now. He was in Pittsburgh.
Did you drive her?
No, he got on a 6 a.m. flight. He got here at like 8 a.m. They had an MA brought in, 9 a.m. They tied the MA into the building. By 1 in the afternoon, he had the entire building running off the
air. Was it like ArtNet or something?
Yeah, it's streaming ACN.
Oh, okay. Done, right?
Done.
So now they can switch over to MA2 instead of the EOS. First, they had lots of their own reasons. Shows that come through that don't bring systems, whether it's The Dog Show or Disney on Ice, or I'm just making this stuff up, come in and go, oh, we wish you had an MA so we could write our own cues, but you have an EOS, which we don't know. They wanted the MA because it's the console of choice among most, right?
Of course.
So now that the building was switched over to MA, I had the ability to bring Giff in as a partner on all the Knicks and Rangers projects because he's the MA programmer.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, EOS guy, who was a good guy.
Yeah.
But now that I had I had more reasons than just helping the garden switch to MA2.
Of course you did.
I wanted GIF to be a part of this project me. But the only way that would have worked was if it was an MA2 project.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we were talking, remember in Pittsburgh, you know, we were going to do an episode then, and you guys had Nixon Richards playoffs. But now that it's MA, you guys can work from home, right?
Yeah, that's amazing. You were playing at the Rex Theater in Pittsburgh, which is very close to my house, right? And you're like, well, just take like an hour off and let's bang this thing out. I said, actually, I have to go back home and continue pre-vising with Chris. We have this great system where we get Skype set up on the computer that runs the visualizer, so he can see it from his place in Florida, and we're able to do most of the queuing for this stuff remotely.
You're watching his computer and giving creative direction, if you will.
Yeah, I've got I forget exactly how I have it, but my 55-inch flat-screen TV is hooked up so I can see that, and I've got my iPad, and we're listening to the music together, if it's a music thing, or... And, you know, I would say that this works out really well for us now, but we wouldn't have been able to do it at first.
Sure.
But since we've been doing this for so long and we know the rigs so well, we know the system, and we know how the sports queuing works, that we've gotten to a place where now we can do it at home and it works. So
that worked out really well. And then, you know, like you said, Baker's does it and just load the 3D file on top. Clone a couple fixtures and you're ready to rock, right?
It was a starting place, and then, you know, as we've been going, we add a few more cues and a few more cues to the house system.
Yeah, are these guys up here in this section bugging you that keep waving their hand?
That one light.
Yeah.
That one freaking light. Yeah. Yes,
I finally tilted it up high enough that he can't get his hand
in
it anymore.
However, bug is a loose term.
Yeah,
it's annoying, but so what?
Yeah,
it's a rock concert. They're having fun waving their hand in front of the light. Go right ahead.
I want to talk about Justin Bieber and Ariana Grande.
How was that from a creative experience for you guys? Like
amazing, because it was so out of the box for me and a challenge, a major challenge, and amazing that I had GIF with me to help me transition into that world, because his experience before Fish had a lot more that form of thinking, you know what I mean? So you know, a cue-to-cue show, that kind of thing, writing songs.
So you started from scratch. You didn't like bring over the Fish file or something.
We started from scratch. We were on Fish tour and got a very generic version of the plot, which is about 700 fixtures long, and met up for dinner and found some big table in a hotel bar where we could get food, GIF could have a glass of wine, we could lay out these gigantic plots all over the table with pens and pencils and go, okay.
Yeah.
And like while we were on Fish tour, we began working on Bieber. So
very cool.
And that was a long process. Yeah, Bieber was crazy.
I'm sure it was. And so how did that lead to Ariana Grande? Am I saying it right, Ariana?
Ariana Grande. Yeah.
Same
management team. And we just gotten such good graces with them on Bieber. They were so happy with the final results of how that show looked. That when it was Ariana Grande was sort of up and coming at the time. And when it came time for her to be a big worldwide sensation, they basically just told her, this is who's lighting you.
Nice.
And she didn't, you know, she didn't know much about that world.
Yeah,
so the management makes the choice.
Sure.
We were happy to be the choice. Like, we're at the top of their list. That's cool.
Well, I imagine, too, having done one band for so much of your career, the challenge is very refreshing.
This type of challenge, pop show, was very refreshing. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of talk out there amongst our people, our industry, that said there's no way Chris could to go from jam band to pop show.
Sure.
It's just not going to work.
Yeah.
And it did.
Nice.
You know, we sort of proved them all wrong.
A little personal victory.
Which is great. Yep. Yeah. But, I mean, having worked for the same band for so long, I mean, yes, but there's so many other acts that I've toured with during the five-year break or during the one-year hiatus break. Aerosmith, R. Kelly, Black Crowes.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty long list.
Yeah, so. I think I read an interview about when the Aerosmith gig came. Must have been pretty pumped for that.
Super pumped.
Yeah.
That's one of those, you know, bucket list.
Oh, of course.
Aerosmith? Like, I'm all over it.
Yeah, totally.
And I'm doing Cat Stevens at the end of the year. And the guy who hired me to do the Cat Stevens thing was the Aerosmith production manager back in 2007. So,
okay.
You know, you keep those contacts.
Yeah, keep them going.
Stay
fresh
with them, and they'll pull you into other things, which is nice.
Okay, so back to the Fish show file. How many songs are cue stacked? And for listeners who don't know, this is a term we use to apply to a specific sequence for a specific song.
The answer used to be zero.
Sure, I know that. I'm just curious now, I guess, how far you've come with...
I'm going to say 8 to 10.
Okay.
Fluffhead is Q-stacked. Punch You in the Eye is Q-stacked. Melt is Q-stacked. Axilla is Q-stacked.
2001, right?
2001 is the first song to ever be Q-stacked.
Sure.
And a handful of others. So the ones that you can punt them, but it's sloppy.
Yeah, you get like a special thing. The one I was noticing was 2001 the other day. Just the builds, you know, for each note. That'd be hard to punt. You know?
He couldn't punt
yeah,
that.
It'd be, yeah.
You could change three colors.
Yeah.
Funhouse power's on.
Funhouse power's on.
There you go. But it's only a handful.
Yeah. You know, and do you enjoy those?
I do. It's like a respite. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, thank God, a Go Button song.
Yeah. But is it just kind of like hard to find time to do more?
It's hard to find time to do more, especially because we're changing rigs all the time.
Yeah.
We want to write more songs, but all our time and effort went into all this automation this year and making it work. And when Giff comes back, we have to have him tell you about the XYZ tracking versus Pan and Tilt and nightmares we've had that we dealt with just trying to get that to work. It was not an easy road.
Yeah.
I mean, we thought we'd spend a day figuring it out.
Yeah.
And spent like 9 days.
So do you have to calibrate that every time you build the rig?
Well, basically the technology is sort of in its infancy, not on the Navigator end, more on the MA end. And it just didn't, there were certain things that are, again, fish only needs that other Q2Q shows wouldn't have to deal with.
But
we did the way fish does. And a lot of it had to do with the transition between XYZ mode coordinates and pan and tilt mode, which is all the stuff in the air, and getting that to work together. And it did not.
Yeah.
And it took GIF days and days and days and days of just trying different things, being on the phone with people who've used Navigator before. He found a Facebook page or something of people who use this system and what problems they've bumped into, and you know, no real solutions.
Yeah.
He just did all the research he could and tried all the ideas that came into his head, and basically in the end wound up figuring out a system with a whole bunch of workarounds and requiring some button pressing on his end during the show to make it all sort of work.
Yeah.
Right. So we're hoping that in the next year, MA comes out with some software updates that solve some of the problems we're having, but we're very happy to be where we are with it.
Yeah.
And that was all GIF. I mean, it was GIF. Literally, it'd be like we'd run into another obstacle and go, well, I have 20 ideas on how to possibly get around this, and I'm just going to keep trying them till one works.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that kind of thing. So,
and this is the system for listeners that where you can control if when the light rig moves, is the light staying on a band member or is the light rig, is it moving with the truss moving?
Both,
yeah.
Depending on what you want.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Both.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll chime in here real quick, but I know you want to dig into this a little deeper later.
Sure.
He's going to dig into this with you.
Yeah, exactly. Just, yeah. But what you just described is actually the crux of the problem, is that most other people who use the tracking system, right, have some lights that are always tracking the thing that they're tracking, right? And that's what those fixtures do.
Yeah.
That's not how the fish show works.
Of course not.
In one queue, those lights are on the stage and they need to stay on the stage regardless of what position the truss is in. And in the next queue, maybe it's one of those rises Chris was describing where they're going to leave the stage and take 35 seconds to go out over the crowd. And that transition between those two modes is where the console technology just isn't there yet. So we had to invent our own ways to make it work.
Sure, I have a few guesses, but I suppose we'll dig into that here in a minute.
I mean, I probably don't even understand it or will describe it exactly what it is, but basically in XYZ mode, the light fixture and the console make the choice of how it gets to its tracking spot. And I guess there's thousands of possibilities using XYZ, and the light just decides how to get there.
Yeah.
So however it decided to get there, now you want it to specifically go to a pan and tilt position.
Yeah.
And most of the time, based on how it decided to get to where it was, when you'd say fly out, all the heads would flip around
yeah,
and turn 360 yeah. degrees, and it was just
a nightmare.
Yeah. Yep. And getting around that small issue was gigantic.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
took forever.
Sure.
All right, we got a lot more we can talk about, but I want to jump ahead to a little fun little segment on the show here called the Strobe Round. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. Some of them have to do with lighting, some of them don't at all, and you just answer them as quickly or as shortly as you like. Okay?
Cool.
So
great.
Okay, first version of MA that you remember using. Do you remember a version number by chance?
It was 1 point something.
Yeah, MA1. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Favorite music to listen to at the moment while designing your programming?
Whitest Boy Alive, Pretty Lights, and the B-52's Pandora Station.
Nice, nice. Star Trek or Star Wars?
Tough call.
We can leave it at a draw.
Both are. I'm a giant Star Wars geek.
Yeah.
I'm a giant Star Trek geek.
Okay, well then let's do favorite character for both then.
My favorite character for Star Wars is probably Han Solo.
Nice.
My favorite character for Star Trek is Captain Kirk. Now, I will say this about Star Trek. Next Generation is useless.
Oh, okay.
I blew right by that one. I just
yeah.
didn't like it.
See, for me, that's the one.
But let's see. So, Captain Kirk in original, Janeway in Voyager.
Yeah.
Right now, I don't know why it took me so long. I'm binge watching Enterprise.
Oh, okay.
Which is good.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
And Bakula's a good captain, but I like the T'Pol, the Vulcan woman.
So you're not a Picard guy at all?
Oh, God, no.
Wow.
No, not at all.
Amazing.
Not at all. That show is just way too much about politics and interspecies relationships.
Right. Yeah, sure. Or
and
Data being human or not. Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Geordi, like, you know, and the kid, I forget the kid's name.
There's yeah. just, Wesley Crusher.
That's the
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
It just wasn't yeah. for me. It wasn't, that
I gotcha.
Wasn't Star Trek.
Gotcha. Okay, how about favorite mix color?
Favorite mix color in a fixture?
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably a color that we refer to as dirty.
Dirty.
Which is not quite white and not quite straw yellow. It's somewhere
yeah,
in
like
between.
Like a CTO almost.
Almost.
Yeah.
You'll
yeah.
see it in my show.
Oh, I've seen it often with magenta.
Often with
yeah,
magenta.
Yeah, I know the color.
Often with Congo.
Yep.
Often
yeah.
it works pretty much with everything.
Yeah.
So.
Is there a name for the look that you have? That's kind of. It seems like it's like default. It's like a blue Congo.
51.
51.
Yep.
It's green in there.
Yep.
Yeah.
You'll see 51 more than any other.
Yeah,
look
well,
in
I
the
feel
show.
Like we've seen it for years too.
You have.
Yeah.
It's my safe place.
51.
Yep.
Nice. Nice. Favorite Simpsons character.
Bart.
Favorite country to visit on tour.
Australia.
Favorite U.S. city.
Wow, that's a tough one.
Let's say to visit on tour.
Favorite U.S. city to visit on tour.
You're hearing the sounds of the audio rig being tested.
Gee, that's a really tough one. I might have to say San Francisco.
Nice. Do you watch Game of Thrones?
Addicted.
Any theories for this season? I haven't seen the last episode, so don't spoil anything.
I haven't seen the third one either.
Okay, great. So we're on the same page.
I think Jon Snow is going to hook up with Daenerys.
Yeah, yeah.
I think my entire theory is that it's going to end with her queen and him king.
Oh, okay.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, sure.
I think some more main characters are going to die. I think Tyrion's going to get his revenge on his sister.
Yeah.
I'm hoping so anyway.
I hope so too, yeah.
Cersei is one of my favorite characters in
Me
Game
too,
of Thrones.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's, you know, it's coming.
She's evil.
It's coming.
I've been calling her the Emperor and the Mountain Darth Vader because they're kind of like, you
it's
know.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Funny, like, if you were to ask me who my favorite Game of Thrones characters are, They're Arya and the Hound.
Nice. Yeah, I swear the Hound is really coming to his own.
I love the Hound.
He sure
when
has.
He died, I was like, come on! And then he came back to life.
Of course, you're never dead in Game of Thrones.
Right. True.
Yeah.
If you get left behind, you're never dead in Game of Thrones.
Exactly.
You know, there's some parts of Game of Thrones that I'm like, all right, enough already. Like the whole Brandon Stark thing. Like, all right, what's going on here? And I want, like, let's get to the White Walkers.
Yeah, right? Totally.
Like, let's do that.
Let's see some dragons fight some zombies, right?
Something. Yep. Yeah, something like that.
Do you ever visit the lot before or after the show?
I used to all the time.
Yeah. When visiting said lot, what was your favorite lot food?
Probably a grilled cheese.
Yeah,
I know that's a standard answer,
but sure.
Yeah. Why not? Yep.
Yeah. How about, go ahead.
I was going to say, now it's in a golf cart, not on foot.
Sure,
I can't go out there on foot. I can't get out of there if I go in there.
I want a tangent here. Like, what's that like for you? Is this something that you were like, never would have thought that the level of celebrity in this scene?
Never would have thought, never aspired to it, never like tried to be that.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
Yeah.
It's really
hard. Like,
is
this kind of, you wish it wasn't there, but you're grateful? Or what's your emotional
attachment? I'm glad it's there. I'm super grateful. It's amazing. But it's just hard to exist in that world.
Sure.
Like, I can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
I can't, like, have a non-recognized moment. And that's kind of tough sometimes. Like, the perfect example is here. The show ends and I walk back to the hotel.
Yeah.
But I get accosted by thousands of people on the street.
Yeah.
You just want to, like, put your hood on and go back
to
the hotel.
It'd be nice if you could pick when it happens, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or going out to the post office, for example, you know, and sending a FedEx to somebody and handing the FedEx to the girl behind the counter.
Yeah.
And she looks at it and goes, the Chris Kuroda? I guess so. You know, like, sure.
It just, you wouldn't think that being a lighting designer that would be normally a thing. And I think for most designers, it's not, you know?
It's an anomaly.
Like, I actually reached out to a designer the other day. I don't even remember his name, but he's big. He's with Big Axe. I don't know who he is. Like, it's just because of the band, I think it's a different kind of thing, you know?
I think so, too.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, it's great, and I'm super grateful. And super
of course.
It's such a cool thing.
Yeah,
but it definitely has its tough moments.
Sure, sure.
I don't go out. I don't go out to shows on my time off. I don't go out, period.
Sure,
you know what I mean? I stay home.
Yeah. Favorite drink to see in the front of house cooler?
Vitamin water.
Nice. A particular flavor?
Triple X.
Favorite movie?
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Great answer. This is one of my favorite questions. I have a speculation about the answer, but you have a time machine that holds a semi's worth of modern gear. What one event or artist would you travel back in time and light?
Grateful Dead, 70s.
Any 70s?
77.
77, yeah. Like Cornell or like?
Yeah, like Cornell.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I figured
there's a lot of great shows.
There's a lot of great,
then.
Yeah.
There's another favorite of mine is 223-74.
Okay.
Which is just another great show. Sure, I'd go back and light
sure,
that.
Sure, yeah.
Great.
Okay, great. Yeah. Lighting technology from the future that you wish we had now?
That's a tough one to answer. Because I don't know what the lighting
technology
from the future will be.
I think Greg might have said being able to bend light. Like he wants light where you can curve it, you know?
That would be cool.
Yeah.
We've mimicked that before. You can tell that story.
Yeah. Oh, and I was just going to chime in and say lighting technology from the future.
Yeah, that we would...
Beam stop, right?
Yeah.
Because this show is all about the big graphics.
Yeah.
But the beam has to terminate somewhere, right? So sometimes we'll cringe when we see a photo that was taken from the stage or when the webcast guys shoot from that angle or something.
Yeah.
And we go, we didn't want to see the gobos all over everybody hitting that weird spot on the ceiling.
Yeah.
We just wanted to see the beams of light.
Do you guys ever go like up there to focus to so that the, you know, the gobos
sometimes.
It's a lot of work, I guess.
Mostly for like band positions.
Sure.
And outside a lot. We have to literally do it by radio.
Yeah,
it's shed tours, that kind of thing.
Yeah, favorite donut?
Probably Boston cream.
Are we going to see that? I mean, this is going to air after.
I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know.
So are you involved at all in the gags and what they're going to play?
No, but I have these moments of like I think this band is just brilliant. I've always thought they're brilliant. I think everything they do is brilliant and fun and whimsical, and they just think everything through.
Yep.
So I knew that. So the first night was Coconut. Okay, they're playing Coconut songs. Oh, I see what they're doing. They're taking the flavor. So the first three nights were over, and I just walked into the production office and went, what's the flavor tomorrow? Just because I wanted to know.
Yeah.
And one of the video guys goes, I shit you not, it's jam-filled. And I looked at him and I went, shut the front door. Come on. He's like, no, it's jam-filled. And I was like, only these guys. Like,
yeah, right?
That is just so great.
Yeah, and then they play like a 30-minute long Lawn Boy.
Just the fact that that was the flavor.
Yeah, like, exactly. It's
unbelievable. Yeah, that night was Jimmy's. Like, of course it's Jimmy's. Of course it is. You know, it's so perfect.
I mean, the universe is a donut, right?
That's why I think these guys, things like that, that they're just freaking brilliant.
It's I was telling Giffitt Lunch, like, the fact that they spent money making donut tickets that came in a box, like most bands just wouldn't think to spend money on that. I think everybody appreciates it.
Yeah.
And I think that's why people know you, is that it's like all part of that. There's this, they've created such a pay attention to everything vibe that people like you get paid attention to, and people like Paul and Gary. You know, I have a I Love Gary sticker on my audio console. Like, what other band knows the front of house guy's name? You know?
True. And he's an amazing front of house guy. I mean, he kills it. So good.
Yeah. Now that we've seen video in a touring fish rig, will we ever see lasers?
It's talked about. I won't say no, but you know, we have sort of have this very purist thing that we believe in.
They don't necessarily feel like a laser band to me, but you could pull it off, I'm sure.
A moment, I've considered phenoms.
Yeah, yeah.
Back now they're brighter. I considered them when they weren't so bright. Now they're brighter, so I would consider them more.
Oh yeah,
but it would, you know, it'd be a moment,
not throughout
the entire show.
Yeah, you know, I've never been big on having them in my show. Not that I have that budget, but you know, I was helping Greg with some MIDI stuff the other day, and he showed me what he's doing, how he can basically just make a gobo and then treat them in the console like a spot fixture.
Yep.
That'd be amazing.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
and it's right for his show also. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Of course, yeah.
Here's the thing about that. So if it's just a moment, A, it has to be a good moment. So you need a lot of them.
Yeah.
And B, you're spending a lot of money on a moment.
Yep.
That's the
Mark Brickman kind of thing.
Right.
You know, one moment in the show and Pink Floyd's laser, you know.
Yep.
Career you'd pick if you weren't in the music industry?
I love to say Walmart shopping cart attendant, but it's funny. That's more of a joke because I don't know if I'm qualified for anything besides lighting designer or Walmart guy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Like, if your life had gone, what were you doing when?
Computer science.
Okay. Yeah.
I was a computer science major in college.
Sure.
So.
UVM?
UVM.
Yeah.
I would probably want to get involved with NASA or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's always been sort of a dream type of thing.
Yeah.
Or a Disney Imagineer.
It's funny because those are both very high on my list. I feel like it's got to be a brain thing, something about this career, you know. It's technical but also creative.
Right.
Like an Imagineer, you know.
Yeah, those guys, they're geniuses.
Yeah.
Literally. You know, like, work at Skywalker Sound or something like that. You
also
know
another
I mean?
One of mine, right. Yeah. Okay, so will we ever get a Chris Kuroda coffee table book?
Yes.
Are you working on one?
You should ask that.
Yeah?
I was working on one and was asked by management to just put it on hold for a little bit because they might want some involvement in it. But that's actually something we've been talking about over the last few years.
I would love to see a Kickstarter for that, or if it just came out, that'd be great.
Maybe we could do it together.
I would love to be involved.
Be awesome.
I have Andy Watson's from Radiohead, and fingering through it, I was like, man, Chris should totally do one of these. Like the rigs, especially the 90s rigs that like... I was here with a buddy who's seen 200 shows, and his first show was in 09. He doesn't even know what those rigs look like.
Right.
And I'd love a reference to just, that used to build, you know, because there used to be so crazy the way you built the rigs.
Right.
All the different trusses.
They were spaceships.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah.
Okay, so is there a stack for David Bowie?
There was.
Not anymore.
There should be.
Yeah.
We just didn't get to it this year.
Okay, so let's say, barring that one, because I think you said it in the past, what's your favorite fish song to punt?
To punt. Favorite fish song to punt. That's tough. There are so many.
It could be a list, too, if you have a few in mind.
Maybe Tweezer. Mm-hmm. Maybe Rock and Roll, even though it's not really a Fish song.
I think that counts.
Yep.
Yeah. How about, what was your favorite of the stacks to program or design?
Fluffhead.
Oh, of course.
Not my favorite to punt, because it's hard.
Sure.
One of my favorite songs.
No, I mean favorite to write.
Fluffhead. Yeah. Because we
found
ways to get really creative with that song when stacking.
Yeah, so. And is it just as fulfilling to run it back?
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, there's all kinds of funny, silly little things that go on in there where Giff and I will look at each other and just go,
nice.
You know, there'll be a moment where, like, the iris opens in X amount of time. People barely notice it, but we do. It's just some little elegant thing, you know, things like that.
I want to give a shout-out to Jim on Late, because I...
Oh, that was a great interview.
Yeah, that interview was... I had never heard you talk before, so hearing through how that stack was being prepared and how it got executed, very cool. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
band member who would be best at running lights?
Trey. No question.
Sure. How are the Giants looking this year?
They're going to win it all.
I
they really are looking good. Yeah, like, I'm not just saying that because I'm a fan. They really are looking
good. How did you feel about the whole Seahawks thing? Like, when they got the NFL film and the Wilson thing, were you like...
I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
I know Trey really liked it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, great. No, I thought that was... They don't do it anymore, which is kind of sad, but...
You mean the Seahawks don't do it anymore?
They don't do the Wilson.
Yeah, that's too bad.
But it was cool.
Yeah.
Why not?
It made an NFL fan out of me. You know?
It's, you know, Fish is like... has become trendy in a weird sort of way.
It's just like Game of Thrones. Like,
right.
It's cool to be a nerd now.
Right. Know? In an unexpected way, and it's cool to see those, like... they play Fish songs on the Weather Channel and, you know, that Wilson thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's just, it's amazing how many Fish fans are secretly doctors and CEOs and lawyers.
Yeah.
And like, you know what I mean?
Of course, yeah.
It's that's happening now.
Yeah.
So they were 18-year-old kids in the 90s, and now they're super successful at some real job, yet they're still diehard Fish fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, they still put on their Fish gear and come to the gig and hide out here.
Yeah.
Justin Bieber is a perfect example of someone who can't walk out his front door without getting accosted by millions of people.
Yeah.
He comes to Fish shows, hides in the audience, and nobody even knows who he is. It's like the one safe place people like
so
this
ironic,
can go.
Yeah.
And it's great for him. Like, that gives Justin Bieber gets a chance to just be a kid.
Yeah.
And not be surrounded with being Justin Bieber.
Well, so where's that spot for you?
Don't know.
Maybe this is the spot. What's the largest fish you've ever caught?
The largest fish I've ever caught is a 120-pound yellowfin tuna.
Did you eat it?
Yes.
Like sushi grade?
Raw.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, how was that?
Fresh right out. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a big fisherman. I do a lot of fishing. I moved to Florida so that I could buy a boat.
And that's just totally ironic that you're
fishing. So you asked me, where's my space?
Yeah.
That's my space.
Yeah.
Out on the ocean on the boat fishing.
But it's just total coincidence that the lighting director for Fish...
Total coincidence.
Loves to fish.
Yep, total coincidence.
That's great.
And the cool thing to elaborate on what you asked is all my Florida buddies and fishing buddies are about the furthest thing away from fish
fans.
That, you know, these are just normal dudes who have normal lives.
And you probably love that.
I love it. It's the best.
Yeah. Also, I guess also tying into the last conversation, are you a believer?
I am a believer.
Nice.
I'm a believer because I, unlike many people, think Justin Bieber's actually a good human being deep down inside.
Yeah,
we got to be pretty good friends when I was out there with him. And if you get the real Justin Bieber, not the show Justin Bieber,
he's
actually just a nice kid from Canada who blah blah blah. He's just look, put yourself in his position.
Yeah, I can't even imagine, man.
You're 13 years old, and all of a sudden you're like the biggest celebrity in the world, and you have. Not a lot of guidance on how to grow up.
Yeah.
So you just have to figure it out
yourself. There's not really a manual for that.
Right. He's made a lot of bad choices, and he's getting older, and he's getting better, and he's getting smarter. He's still not perfect, but Justin Bieber's a good kid. I mean, people are going to hear me say that and go, what, are you out of your mind? But he actually, I believe, is a good kid.
Nice.
So.
Nice. Okay, in 02, when the Fish Simpsons episode came out, were you bummed at all that there wasn't a Kuroda rig behind them?
Not at all. You just, didn't even occur to me.
You're just pumped.
Yeah, I was happy for those four guys.
Great,
you know,
of course,
what I mean?
Of course. Well, that ties in my next question. The CK5 name, do you hate it? Do you, like, really wear it as a badge of honor? But, like, what's your opinion on
it,
that?
I'm honored by it. Honored by it. I'm honored that people call me that, think that, consider me that. But I will say that I do not consider myself that.
Sure.
Fish is four people. Yeah. Those guys on stage.
Yeah.
I'm just here doing my thing. And, you know, it's a total honor and it's super cool. Again, sort of talking about the celebrity thing. I love it. You know, people wear hats and they make shirts and it's super cool. Yeah. But in the end, Fish is four people.
Sure. Was there a point when you thought glow sticks were cool?
Yes.
And how long?
Back when there were more of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was never like, oh man, we got all these lights. Like, why we turn them off for the glow sticks?
That was a cool moment.
Or like, was it a cool moment once, and then from then on, it was, you know?
Sort of, yeah, I describe it as that. Cool moment once, and then the thing is that when it was cool, there were like millions of them, and it actually was a thing.
Yeah.
Now, when Harry Hood happens and it's the dark part, there's like 30.
Yeah.
It's not what it used
and
to
didn't,
be.
Didn't one crack your screen once?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, one of the big ones.
Yeah, yeah.
They trigger lighting cues all the time.
Really? Like hitting a button?
Yep, they hit a button and you're like, oh, that happens constantly.
Oh, man. Have you ever considered like nets or something?
I mean, that would be nice, but no.
Not that big.
The thing I don't understand, well, I guess I do understand and don't understand at the same time, is why do they want to throw them at me?
Yeah, that is
they
weird.
They want to throw them at me.
Yeah.
Maybe because they're like, oh, what he's doing is great. Like, yay, we're in the thrall of the moment of the concert.
But like
the
roses time, or something?
Like, right, but don't throw them at me.
Yeah.
Throw them in the air.
Yeah.
I get targeted by those things. It's crazy.
Yeah. Is there one particular moment that stands out as the most emotional or happy moment of your career running Lights for Fish?
The most emotional moment was definitely the last night of Coventry.
Yeah.
Because we were done. At that particular time, we were done. There was no talk about ever coming back.
Yeah.
The happiest, that was also very happy. It was sort of bittersweet happy. But my favorite night I've ever had was the first time we ever played in this room in 1994.
Yeah.
That was just such a big deal for me. I grew up here.
Yeah, lots of goosebumps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, it was one of those things, like, I never get nervous, and I was nervous that night.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we were here. And wound up having one of the best nights we'd ever had. But,
yeah
that
I mean, it's definitely a historic night for the band.
And that's 2014. We're talking 23 years ago, and that still stands out to me as well.
Yeah. So, how does that make this run feel for you? Is it surreal being here every night, or is it kind of business as usual since...
It's becoming business as usual, but for many years it was surreal.
Sure.
But God, I've been in this building. I do all the Knicks and Rangers, do Fish, done other tours. I've been in this building. I've done 100 shows in this building now.
Yeah, yeah.
Back then, not so much.
Nice. I guess let's head back to the console here. What happened to the MIDI keyboard?
It just became cumbersome.
Sure.
Didn't need it anymore.
Sure.
We got smarter about using the real estate on the touch screens. There's a lot of buttons that are doing double and triple duty now, depending on what state something else is in, and it just kept it more compact and clean.
Yeah,
I needed buttons, but now, you know, it's just a little more console logic as well. So I'd have a button for a blue wipe.
Yeah.
I'd have a button for a blue sprinkle. I'd have a button for a blue wipe the other way.
Yeah.
I'd have a button for a blue fade.
Mm-hmm.
Now the same button does it all, and I have a macro.
Yeah.
That says wipe left, wipe right, sprinkle, fade, hit the macro, hit the button.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just
console space, yeah.
Yeah, better use of console space and logic as well, you know what I mean? And again, that's GIF going, well, you don't need that. Let's do it this way.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
It's got to be nice after all these years having someone kind of be your editor, if you will.
Yeah. The worst thing is he every year he tries to move things around on me. This isn't organized well enough. These buttons that have been here for your whole life, I'm moving over there now, so they're with buttons that are more like them. And I'm like, you can't do that because hand is used to going there for that.
Oh, you should have seen it last year. We had to clean out an entire screen because that became the interface for the video, right? And that I know that was painful for Chris.
But again, it's just muscle memory.
Yeah, you get it back. Quickly.
You get it back, but it's scary.
Yeah.
What do you mean you're moving that go-to button on me that I need 50 times a night to somewhere else?
Oh, yeah.
And the first couple shows, it's not there. Of course, my hand goes up. Where is it? I can't find it over here. Now the moment's gone. Oh, well, you know, but you learn.
Yeah.
And that muscle memory really is a big part of running this particular show. You mentioned pages briefly before. I think it's worth pointing out that there is zero page changing in this show.
Yeah.
Nothing that's in front of Chris changes or needs to be changed.
It's always
to get to where he needs to go. Right?
Unless it's macro based.
Yeah, okay. Like the macro is doing the page changing for you, right?
But it's not actually changing pages. It's just replacing things that are right in front of you.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I gotcha.
But back to his example with the wipe and the sprinkle and the whatever, like when you hit that button, you're going to get blue something. Now, whether it's going to do what form it's going to do that is determined by a macro that moves things into those slots, but it's not actually changing
the
page.
But also, I mean, the audience doesn't know that you meant left versus right, so if you hit it wrong, only you will be disappointed, right?
The cue still plays in the exact right amount of time and does what you're looking for. Exactly.
Yeah. I struggled with that a lot. I used to always be like, I want this look. No, I want this look. And I would, you know, at first I would do it out of time. No, nobody cares that I wanted one versus the other. You have to do it in time.
Just pick one and go.
Yeah.
It's pretty much it.
Yeah. Well, I guess back with the muscle memory console layout questions, can you talk about the Parcan Vaders, if you will, if that's how you would describe them?
They're all BIs.
Yeah, and how many are there?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 15.
So you have 15 faders. Can you explain this to our listeners, what they're dedicated, what they do?
They're literally a 2017 version of Parcans. They're the BIs. They're on the, you know, they have several positions, but when they're parked in their on-the-band position, they're just, you know, BIs be blue, BIs be red, BIs
so
be magenta.
Do you still have them divided up so that one set is one group of BIs and the next fader is another set?
Both.
As always, right?
Sometimes it's two groups, sometimes it's one big group, depending on what we need.
And so what happens if you go from one color to another? Does it fade to the new?
If it's the same group,
yes,
it fades in 1 second. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's an interesting because as soon as that fader is 1% up, the color fade will happen.
Yeah.
So then that takes a little like thinking of, all right, if I don't want the new color bright, I have to fade down the old color X amount and then get the new color and then fade that up intensity wise.
And you would never just have one fader for the Parcans and a picker for the color. Right?
No.
Yeah.
Doesn't work.
Just because you're used to the, I need the red fader, I need the magenta fader.
And there's some elegance involved in fading in and out, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've been through a lot. Is there anything in particular that you wanted to talk about that maybe you don't usually have a platform for, but do now?
Not necessarily. I just, you know, just that we're constantly trying to evolve. Evolution is our thing. Mm-hmm. So sometimes along the road, we'll, you know, come up with things that not everybody likes.
Mm-hmm.
The video screens were a perfect example where there was sort of a 50-50 love it or hate it thing.
Yeah.
But we had to try it.
Yeah. How about the LED rings? I feel like that,
the ovals.
Yeah.
Total disaster.
Yeah. But you guys didn't think that building it, right?
No, we thought it'd be great.
Yeah.
It just turned out to be a total disaster.
Yeah.
Also, that was GIF wasn't here for that, and I was working with another person, and sort of got convinced by the other person some ideas that I normally wouldn't have chosen myself.
Sure.
Got convinced they were great ideas. Went along with it, fell into the trap, and then they weren't.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Maybe not just what this band needs.
Yeah, you learn that lesson.
Yeah. But I mean, how much did you learn from that? That had to be just as valuable as being successful.
You have to go through that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, it was a great learning experience, and it had to happen for things to evolve further down the line. You grow with these things, right? The only thing I wanted to say is concerning the LED and where we're at, this rig with all the automation and stuff seems to be getting just unanimous love.
Oh, absolutely. So, I can say both from the lighting community and just the fans that I've seen here since we've been here for after parties. It's just people like love it.
That's the most gratifying thing, because when you're sitting at home drawing on paper, coming up with ideas, you know, months and months and months before you're out there and hoping it's good, and you think it's good, but you've never seen it live and you don't really know what it can do yet, and you're just in concept mode. For to go from concept mode to where we are now with this, with just the all the attention it's getting, and it's all so positive, is unbelievably gratifying.
It has to be. I also feel like it's also gratifying too for you, because it's like you're back to your basics. You're back to what you do. I'm sure you're much more comfortable without the video, and people are freaking out about that. That's got to feel good.
It does.
Yeah.
And we're still doing cutting edge things like making trusses go vertical, which nobody's done before.
Yeah.
Having those sort of back pocket, you know, game changers, as well as being back to basics. So
sure.
This concludes the first half of my interview with the Fish Lighting Team. Hope you're enjoying yourself so far. Next episode, we're going to dig in deep with Giff and Kuroda on the inner workings of the show file and how the automation works with Tate Towers and integrates back into the MA. Also, Lighting Crew Chief Terry Smith helps me understand what it takes to engineer and hang a rig of this scale. So, stay in touch. Hit me up on Twitter if you've got questions. Luke_Stratton. As always, you can check out my work at LukeStratDesigns.com. As always, thanks for listening.